The following podcast is provided to you free, as is all our content, at drhoffman.com. If you'd like to listen, help support Intelligent Medicine, and get great values by shopping at our supplement store, go to drhoffman.com and click on Shop, then click on the store. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's clinical focus, you know, we're working our way through the world of nutrition and through various medical states, and today we're going to consider the very, very important question of, do weight loss supplements work? And if so, which ones are the safest? Which ones are preferable, which ones have outsized claims, and which ones actually have truthful claims. This is a very, very complex subject, and of course, recently highlighted in the great deal of controversy surrounding Dr. Mehmet Oz, who has done a series of programs about the benefits of various weight loss supplements. Some claim merely in an effort to gain ratings. He went down to testify to Congress about the supplement industry. He thought he was going to get all kinds of accolades. Instead, he got ambushed and attacked for promoting fat busters and belly busters and fat blasters. And, you know, this seems to be kind of a lurid sales pitch that is all out of proportion to the veracity of the claims. And so we're going to work our way through some of the supplements in today's podcast that are purported to work for weight loss. So let's first of all frame the problem. This, of course, is a huge problem. Currently, two-thirds of adults are considered overweight. That's controversial because there's the matter of the BMI, which is used as the criterion by which we categorize weight, and it's possible that we may be overestimating the number of people who are overweight as a result. And I recently did a podcast about how even just a little bit of overweight above the BMI criteria may actually not be deleterious for some people, certain ages, certain medical conditions, a little extra weight. It's called the obesity paradox. Nonetheless, this is an alarming statistic. One-third of children now are categorized as overweight or obese. So this is a big problem. And we expend lots and lots of money to treat obesity, the consequences of obesity. 45% of overweight and 67% of obese individuals are trying to lose weight. 15% have tried weight loss dietary supplements. And so this is a huge industry. And, you know, one of the reasons that people try nutritionals, well, a couple of reasons people try nutritional supplements. One, the medications that are available are either they don't work, or they work short-term, and then when you stop them, and often you have to stop them because of side effects, the weight comes back. And also because of the expense and lack of availability of proper medical care, a lot of people can't access these. Not such a bad thing because most of these supplements can have serious side effects. Think of all the weight loss supplements that were purported to work, the conventional ones that ended up being taken off the market because they're dangerous, they're addictive, and so on. So they've really billions, literally billions and billions of dollars have been expended in the quest for the holy grail of safe and effective weight loss prescription medication, and they really have only come up with limited success. So as a result, people turn to nutritional supplements, and I'm going to say up front that I have to say I am not the biggest fan of nutritional supplements for weight loss. I don't believe that they play a major role in weight loss. I'll qualify that a little later when I mention some of the ones that I think can be helpful adjuncts to sensible programs of weight loss. But there ain't no magic there when it comes to a supplement that can miraculously help you shed the pounds effortlessly without diet and exercise. Just, you know, you're chasing a mirage, if you think that that is the case. So with that caveat in mind, And by the way, I've also many times, you know, I do have a commercial radio career, and I've been encouraged to endorse this or that or the other weight loss supplement. And if you examine my radio career over, 25 plus years, you can see that I've been very wary about taking money, accepting endorsement fees for products associated with weight loss. It's just not a category that I'm happy with. So, what are the basic categories of weight loss supplements? Well, first of all, let's just talk about the idea of supplementation in general. Does it help people lose weight? Some people think, well, I take vitamins. That's going to help me have a better metabolism. I'll burn fat better because I'm taking a multi. And I have to say, there's really not a lot of evidence behind that contention that taking a simple multivitamin or even megadosing on, say, B vitamins or one or another component of a multivitamin is going to help you lose weight. However, if you're on a very, very limited diet, if you're, you know, on, say, an 800-calorie diet or 600-calorie diet, very really skimping on food intake, it may make sense to take a multivitamin to make sure that you've got a nutritional insurance policy to make sure you're not skimping on critical nutrients. Because if you are eating less, you may not get adequate levels of certain things, and that can actually slow down or block your metabolism. There is that notion. Alternatively, there may be some people who have a critical vitamin or mineral deficiency. Say they have pernicious anemia due to B12 deficiency, and they feel too tired to exercise, and that's a person who may end up gaining weight. And if they took a, you know, B complex or a methylcobalamin B12 supplement, they might end up losing weight because they're correcting a specific nutritional deficiency that's making them sluggish and lethargic. It could be iron, it could be any number of critical vitamins that can cause you to be de-energized. That is a possibility. And there is some research that suggests that obese individuals are often low in vitamin D, which has led people to suspect that if you give people vitamin D, they're going to lose weight. But correlation isn't necessarily causation. Overweight individuals have greater amounts of body fat that sequesters vitamin D. They may seem to have lower vitamin D. Also, overweight individuals may have blood sugar problems, and that may be associated with low vitamin D. Vitamin D helps with insulin resistance, and we can employ vitamin D in diabetes, type 2 diabetes, or pre-diabetes, or metabolic syndrome, or insulin resistance to help the metabolism. Now, does that necessarily translate into miraculous weight loss? I think the results are rather equivocal on that. They haven't really proven that administering high doses of vitamin D to obese individuals, even those with low vitamin D, necessarily makes them lose weight. So that is, I mean, I just want to say up front that vitamins may play a role, but they don't play the crucial role, and they're not miraculous ways of speeding up your metabolism so that the pounds melt off. So having said that, let's talk about different types of supplements that the different categories of weight loss ingredients. Okay, we can break it down into supplements that increase satiety or reduce appetite. And these might include things like fiber products like guar gum or hoodia is not really a fiber product, but it does purport to lower appetite. Glucomannan is a soluble fiber product that is often employed in weight loss formulas and is thought to help to reduce appetite. So reducing appetite, increasing satiety, that's one category. Another is products that either block fat absorption or block carbohydrate absorption. Chitosan is a product that purports to block fat absorption. And alternatively, you have phasioline, which is a starch blocker. And we'll talk about those in just a moment. You have things that can modulate carbohydrate metabolism, and that would include things like chromium, the aforementioned vitamin D, which both help with blood sugar metabolism, and or You have things like berberine, which helps with insulin resistance, and things like gymnema, which may help with insulin resistance. We'll talk a little bit about those in just a few moments. Things that increase fat oxidation or reduce the synthesis of fat. Well, this might include raspberry ketones and hydroxycitric acid, which comes from Garcinia cambogia. These are things that purport to increase fat burning. They're fat burning agents. We'll talk about the bona fides of that proposition. And then there are things that increase energy expenditure. They are thermogenic agents, which is a little different than the prospect behind raspberry ketones and hydroxycitric acid. Things like just a good old-fashioned caffeine may increase energy expenditure. Also, ephedra, which, by the way, is now banned, bitter orange or citrus aurantium, and capsaicin. Capsaicin, which is a derivative of non-spicy hot peppers. Hot peppers, there's actually some literature on hot peppers and fat increasing energy expenditure or thermogenic effects. Obviously, you know, you eat a hot pepper and you feel hot, maybe that's increasing your body's energy expenditure. So these are the main categories. Also, CLA, conjugated linoleic acid, fits into there somewhere, and we'll discuss that momentarily. So when it comes to nutritional supplements for weight loss, the two basic questions are, do they work? And that is a very, very high bar for many of these products because many of them don't, but they purport to work, but they don't really work. And then the other question is, are they safe? Are there adverse effects? Do they cause problems? Or can they interact harmfully with medications that people take routinely? And so in evaluating these, you got to look at the science. And when you go to the science, there are various levels of proof that things work. And it's hard for an unsophisticated layperson to distinguish between different levels of evidence that suggest that something is effective. So at one level of evidence, there are what is called in vitro research, which means in the test tube, something does something to fat cells. Perhaps you sprinkle a little bit of something on a fat cell and it shrinks in a test tube. That's promising, but that doesn't necessarily mean that ultimately it's going to work in people. Then there's animal research, and we have many, many examples in the nutritional supplement field regarding weight loss products where things work on rats or mice, but they don't work on people because rats and mice have different metabolism than people. And also sometimes they can give unrealistically high doses of certain things. You know, they put a very large amount of something into an animal's feed, but you'd have to consume a pound of it yourself every day, and that, A, wouldn't be feasible, and B, it would be too expensive. And instead, they sell you, you know, two or three capsules of a material where you'd have to consume a pound of it, and that's an inference that you can't make that it's going to work, right? The dosage is wrong. There's also lots of case reports. You know, you can get anecdotes. You can get testimonials, and testimonials abound, and some of them are real, but the vast majority of them are made up, and they sound very persuasive. You can have types of studies that are not necessarily such good studies. They're studies where you take a bunch of people and you tell them that they're going to take a weight loss pill and they try a weight loss pill and yes, indeed, they lose weight. But there's no control. You need a control. You need a group that's getting a placebo to see if these studies really work properly. So ultimately, what's going to really prove that these things work are what are called double-blind placebo-controlled studies with large numbers of people. And for the most part, when it comes to nutritional supplements, these types of studies are lacking. There are very few of these studies. So let's take a look at some of the first category of ingredients. We'll start with the ingredients that increase satiety or reduce appetite, and among which is a traditional ingredient called guar gum. It's a soluble dietary fiber from Indian cluster bean, and what it does, it acts like a sponge. It bulks in the gut, and it is, it makes sense that if you take in something that acts like a sponge, absorbing many times its weight in water, it can potentially reduce your appetite. It certainly, it can make you feel a little nauseous and full. And so the question is, does it work? Well, they did a meta-analysis of 11 randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trials. So there's a study of many good studies. And not that many subjects, 203 subjects, they received either 9 to 30 grams per day of guar gum, which is quite a lot, figuring that a capsule is a gram, and they got 9 to 30 grams, so that's a lot of capsules or a lot of raw material. And they just were kept to their usual dietary advice was given. 3 weeks to 6 months in duration, what they found was there was a slight difference in weight loss, the guar gum versus placebo, but it wasn't significant. It was very slight. So even with something as obvious in its potential effects as guar gum, didn't really work that well. Is it safe? Well, yeah, there was gas, bloating, diarrhea, cramps. Could it interfere with medications? Yes, it could decrease the absorption of certain drugs if you're taking medications. So not the biggest, slam dunk success for guar gum. Then there was something that, and I embraced this for a while, as did many of you, Hoodia. It was a big story out of South Africa where the Bushmen used an extract from a succulent plant located in the Kalahari Desert in South Africa. And, you probably never saw a fat Bushman, at least in the Kalahari Desert, maybe when they moved to cities, but they're pretty lean and mean. But maybe that doesn't have to do with their consumption of Hoodia. Maybe it has to do with the fact that they're on virtually a starvation diet and they have to forage for miles and miles a day to find food, the meager amount of food that they're actually able to catch or gather. So it's purported to work as an appetite suppressant used traditionally on long hunts. So they would go out days and days, they wouldn't find any game, and they would chew on the Hoodia, and that would give them stamina and strength, and they weren't hungry. And, I asked the question, if they really weren't hungry, why do they keep hunting? They could have just sat down and ate the Hoodia, and then they would have starved to death. But does it work? Well, there's very little research, and it got a lot of play, and it actually got picked up by a major company. I think it was Lever Brothers that bought a patent on it so that they could have an exclusive distribution rights. And it looked like it was going to take off for a while, but they left the patent on the table because they felt they could not responsibly market it because the research was too weak. And so Hoodia became a real flash in the pan. There's very little research on it. One randomized controlled trial, 49 overweight women, they found that there was no significant effect on energy intake or body weight. And that, I have to say, it was a small study that could really slam the lid on Hoodia. And apparently it did because it's really been eclipsed in popularity. Very few people are using it. I no longer recommend it. Adverse effects, pretty minor. Some people reported increased heart rate, some changes on labs noted occasionally, but generally safe. Those are the main place. Glucomannan and other sources of fiber can be used if this works for you as a strategy. You can also take, some people take like something before meals. They drink a lot of water. Actually, there's some studies have shown that increasing your water intake can help you lose weight. Basically, it fills you up, and you can take fiber pills. Glucomannan is another popular form of fiber, but there's not a lot of documentation that it works. Okay, another principle for these products is the fat blockers and the starch blockers. Let's start with the fat blockers. Chitosan is an extract of shellfish. It's from the skeletons of crustaceans. So it's heads up, those of you following a kosher program, it's not kosher. And it binds dietary fat within the GI tract, which sounds like a great thing. But you remember there is actually a product that they used to put in potato chips and other products. It's called olein. And this is a product that's also a fat binder. It's a commercial product that they authorize for food. And it had some nasty side effects. It tended to give people diarrhea, bloating, and the dread side effect of anal leakage, which is not pleasant. So if you really worked, you would have fat malabsorption, or you'd have, you know. So what ended up happening in research is that there's a non-significant increase in fecal fat excretion. In other words, that it bound to the fat and pulled it out of your system. The studies conclude that there's some evidence that chitosan is more effective than placebo in the short-term treatment of overweight and obesity. But, you know, part of the effect might be that when you take products that block fat or sequester fat, prevent it from being absorbed, it has to go out via the digestive tract, and that causes gastrointestinal distress. And maybe, you can get the same effect if you learn to avoid fat. Instead of eating the fat and then having it absorbed by the chitosan, causing you gastrointestinal distress, which makes you reluctant to eat fat. You're sort of a behavior mod, almost like ad abuse for alcoholics, where, you know, if you drink alcohol, you get a terrible wallop, you feel horrible, you feel like you've been kicked by a horse. Well, some of these products are like that. You get side effects from consumption of either the fat in fat blockers or the starch in starch blockers, and that makes you want to avoid those things. And that may be part of why these things could work, but they're unpleasant side effects. All right. Let's take a look at the phasioline, which is the starch blocker. They are all the rage, or I think they sort of crested in their popularity. The manufacturers of something called phasioline claim that taking their starch blockers will block, quote, empty calories from spaghetti, bread, etc. And that is because they have alpha amylase inhibitors, which are derived from beans. And you know the expression beans, the musical fruit, the more you eat, the more you know, you've heard that old poem. The alpha amylase inhibitor stops the digestion of carbohydrates, causing the starch to pass through the digestive tract without being absorbed. Well, it sounds plausible that could help, but then what happens when it passes through your gastrointestinal tract? You may experience lots of gas and bloating. This has actually been tested out. And not only can it be cause unpleasant side effects, bean-like side effects, but they actually looked at the degree to which these things prevented the absorption of carbohydrates. And this is through complex analysis of stool and recovery of certain markers in the stool. And what they found was that they don't really that effectively block starches, number one. And number two, they don't have that much of an impact on weight loss. Also, the FDA has received complaints of nausea, vomiting, intestinal cramps, and diarrhea from phasioline customers. What went wrong? The New England Journal of Medicine suggests that much more alpha amylase is secreted than is needed to actually digest the starch. There's still enough alpha amylase to break down the starch into digestible forms, even with these supplements. So they don't really work that effectively to block the digestive enzymes. And even the manufacturers of phasioline admit that the success of their product depends on the timing of administration of the pill. And, you know, you have to take it precisely when you're taking the carbohydrates. It sounds like an easier way to go would be just avoid the carbohydrates. and go on a low-carb diet. But, you know, again, there may be some psychological effect of antabuse-like intolerance when you eat too many carbohydrates while you're taking these pills. This is not something which has been proven to work. All right. We generally split these podcasts into two parts. So when we return, we're going to talk about Garcinia cambogia and Capsiate and some of the other weight loss products, caffeine, ephedra, green tea, and so on. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.